Well, it's good to be back. I've been gone for 5 weeks. This is a hard place to stay away from for 5 weeks. I don't know how some of y'all do it, some of you backsliders. I don't know how you do it. Anyway, I was told that I couldn't do it. I was told that I wouldn't be able to stay away from the church. I'd come into the office. I heard all kinds of things. Are you kidding me? I was long gone, man. Resting, enjoying life, my family, hiking the mountains that I drive by all the time. So I've hiked to the top of these mountains, and very refreshed, and I'm very privileged to have had that opportunity, and I thank both the congregation and the eldership for that. But now it's time to get back to the Word of God. Here we go. Isaiah 40, there's a familiar passage, Isaiah 40, verse 28 to 31. So you got an Old Testament prophet written about 800 years before the time of Christ. I want to talk to you today about maybe there's someone here who's in need of some rest. Maybe there's someone here who's in need of some strength. And I want to talk to you about what happens when we start running out of strength. What happens when we start running out of resiliency? And what happens when we sort of find ourselves down and sometimes out? So let's talk about that, shall we? I know you've been talking about heightening your access to God, some key messages about working from victory, not for victory. I like the idea that you've been accentuating weaknesses and the strength of the Lord in the midst of weakness. I have found that weakness is a thing that we want to embrace, we want to acknowledge, we want to sit in. We want to embrace it from the standpoint of, yes, I can be weak. And I tell you, it's in those weakest times of our life that we find the strength of the Lord. And you've also been talking about reverence and of course, expanding your us. And I appreciate Dr. Steele's ministry, and I want to ask you a few questions as we get started here. When it comes to your Christian walk, when it comes to your life, what is it that you want? King Artaxerxes asked this of Nehemiah. It's a profound question. Because if you don't know how to answer this question, you don't really know what you're going after, do you? What is it that you want? I would add a second question to that. What is it that you want to become? You know, church is about transformation, change, alterations. It's about becoming something beyond where you are. What is it you want, and what is it you want to become? If you don't have a handout or something, we have a handout this morning. If you don't have one, raise your hand. We'll make sure you get one. What is it you want, and what is it you want to become? I would go on to say, as you look at your life, I would say there's probably something resisting that process. It might even be you. What do you want to become? But what? There's a problem. There's something in the way. There's a hindrance to that. And it's usually manifested in three ways. The first thing is it's external. Maybe you don't have enough money. Maybe you don't have a job. Maybe you don't have enough opportunity. Maybe you're sick. That's an external thing. So there's external resistance. The second thing is there's internal resistance. You might think, well, I'm not worth it. I'm too ashamed, or I'm not going to get this. This is going to happen. And this never happens to me. What it is I want, I'll never have because I'm not worth it. And on top of that, I'm not even sure I can do it. I'm not even sure I can make it happen. Okay, that's an internal conflict. There are others. External, internal, and then the last is sort of a conceptual or philosophical issue you have going on. And that too can be a resistance to you actually living the life you want to live. But I'm sure God's involved in it somewhere. That's the philosophical thing. And I'm sure that it's going to be something about good versus evil, overcoming evil, and overcoming yourself. So what it is you want, what do you want to become? There's three things in the way of that. One's external, one's internal, and one's conceptual. And I would go on to say, you need someone, and this is where we really fall out of the wagon. We tend to need someone to help us get there. Most of us don't have someone to help get there. You know, no one to walk alongside of us. And this is one of the biggest recipes for disaster, is to go live your life like the Lone Ranger and keep everyone at a distance, and no one really knows the real you, what's going on inside you, and they don't really know what you really want, and they don't really know what you want to become. So as a result, you just sort of move through this mass of people in the world, and you're sort of in a group, but you're all alone because no one really understands you and what it is you're trying to accomplish. Everyone needs someone to help them. You need a mentor, you need a guide, you need a confidant, you need someone who knows you, even the you you don't like much. And that person typically helps you put a plan together. Most people put a plan together without anyone else's help. And the plan usually ends up blowing up around the way sometime. So we need someone to help walk with us that we can trust, that helps us put a plan together and helps us execute that plan. Keep it in mind, the result can be two things, very successful or a miserable failure. But whatever the case may be, there's a tension there. There's a tension that we need God to be successful, we need God to overcome, we need God to become who we want to become, and if we don't have him, we don't have someone helping us, we're likely just going to remain the same, and that's not acceptable. Not in this church, anyway. Status quo is not acceptable. Now, in the middle of all of that, we get flat wore out. When do we get wore out the most? We get wore out after big events. Holidays, a lot of energy, a lot of effort, a lot of emotional energy, a lot of physical energy. And then the holidays are over and a new year begins, and what happens? Like, I just realized around the middle of January, I'm exhausted, right? Or I can remember training for road races and marathons, and you look forward to something. Something big's on the calendar, and you're really trying to get it done. And then it comes, and then it's over with, and then you look back and goes, man, I'm totally wore out and even depressed. Oftentimes, weariness and fatigue and just emptiness comes after big events. It's just the way it is. I remember when I first got into ministry, I was so excited, you know, we got an annual plan, we got a staff, we're going to carry out our goals, and then December comes, and Christmas, and it's all big to do, and then the last week of the year, and then January comes, and it dawns on you, oh my gosh, I just realized something. I got to do this all over again. And I've been doing it all over again for 20 years. And you've got to know what you need when you need it based on what's going on externally around you to overcome that. You get tired sometimes of singing in the choir. You get tired of serving in the children's ministry. You get tired of being a deacon. You get tired of being an elder. I'll tell you when you get tired of being an elder. At 6:30 on a 30-degree day when it's raining, you're really tired of being an elder when your meeting's at 7. But this is just life. You're in school and you have final exams and you just crash and burn afterwards because I didn't think I could actually do that. Now it's over and I'm just wasted. Well, in the middle of all that, we have Isaiah 40, verse 28 and 31. And it starts out like this. Do you not know? This is a great question. Do you not know? Have you not heard? It's kind of like we go about our lives and then all of a sudden, you know, we just get this weirdness going on. We're not up, we're not down, we're just kind of blah. And it's almost like we forgot. I mean, we didn't forget mentally, but we forgot spiritually. We forgot emotionally. We even forgot physically. That God, do you not know that God, do you not know that God has something for you? Do you not know and have you not heard what? The Lord is the everlasting God. And he's not defined by our emotions or our emptiness or our mistakes or anything else. He is who he is apart from us. He doesn't need us to define himself. We need him to define ourselves. That's the way that works. The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. I have come to an understanding as I really observe life at my age now, and I've come up with this. I don't know what the percentage is of the God in the Bible we worship, but I know it's not 100. We just got done worshiping a God as we know him, as we've experienced him. And that was different for everybody in the room because we're all at different places. Some of you maybe have been a Christian a couple of weeks. Some of you aren't even a Christian yet. Others of us have been walking with the Lord for decades. But the God we just worshiped is in the context of our understanding of him, usually defined by our awareness of the lyrics and our experience of him. And don't define your Christian walk. Please don't define your Christian walk by your experience with him, because Do you not know? Have you not heard? No one can fathom what I'm about to tell you. No one can fathom him. So we're worshiping this God we've constructed. And unfortunately, what happens is pastors stand in this pulpit and they're like contractors building the kingdom of God with a blueprint that was handed to them by some other person, some seminary, some bureaucracy, some denomination told them, gave them the blueprint, and I said, go build the kingdom of God. Well, with what? With the God that we told you about. But that's not all there is. There's a God who's much bigger than that, one you cannot fathom, one who has a peace that transcends, boom, blows your mind, all understanding. This is why I get so irritated with people who are defining Christianity based on their experiences. No, God's far better than that. The Lord is an everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. In fact, he doesn't even grow. He doesn't grow up, he doesn't grow out, and he doesn't grow weary. There, you know, like he expends energy every second of every day, even before every second of every day was ever like created, and he has the same amount of energy now as he did, well, as he always had. He's not wore out. As a matter of fact, he's not wore out with you. It's not like he's exhausted over you. He's full of life. He is life. He's full of love. He is love. He will not grow tired or weary in his understanding. No one can fathom. So please don't try to. I tell you what, with the advent of the cell phone, here's the thing. You don't even think about it anymore. If you have any question about anything, you're within 18 to 24 inches of an answer in about 0.03 seconds, and you know it. Well, don't Google God, and don't ask Siri. She won't even attempt it. Ask her, tell me about God. She'll tell you she'd rather refrain from that conversation. You can't fathom it, and you can't Google God. And if you're evaluating who you are in Christ right now based on your experiences your whole life, boy, you're really selling yourself short. He's bigger than that. You can't fathom him. Fathom is a great word. He gives strength and weary to the weary and increases the power of the weak. All right, what does he have for us? He has strength. Okay, what does this word mean? I know strength. We know what that means. But in the Hebrew language, it means the strength of an animal that plows the ground. Anybody ever seen War Horse, the movie? Why is every time I ask a question, I'm the only one in the church that's seen the movie? Anybody seen War Horse? Thank you. I was thinking, this movie made millions of dollars. Why didn't this congregation go to it? Anyway, he's got to plow this field with a bunch of rocks in it. It takes great might, great power, great resiliency, great torque. See, God wants to give you torque. He wants to give you the low four-wheel drive and the high four-wheel drive. To get out of any mess you get into, he's got the torque for you. He's got the get up and go for you. And you can't fathom it. So don't try to. And don't define it. Don't limit him. And don't tell him what he's going to do. Because you can't fathom it. That's what Isaiah's saying. He's got torque for you. A revitalization of that's going to bring fruit out of the ground. The necessary things that have to be done that you don't want to do, that you don't have the discipline to do, that you're too weak to do, and I'm too weak to do. The things we avoid, the things we rationalize, the things we put on the to-do list and they remain there for months. He's got the torque for you to do those things, to face those things, to handle those things. He's got the strength, and you can't fathom. And when you're weary, what does this mean? Emotionally frazzled. And what does it give you? Power. What kind of power? The power that is excessive, that goes beyond what it is you actually need. See, here's the thing. God knows what you need, and he's not interested in meeting that need. He's actually interested in exceeding your need. And we have to know that, because I'll tell you why. We are too low in putting the bar too low for God. We don't pray big enough prayers. We just kind of keep it comfortable where he's got to come in like, you know, under the radar and do small things. We don't ask him for the big things. He wants to give us power that overflows from us. We can't fathom. So that's the ways of God. Now let's consider the ways of man. Isaiah says that even youths, or if you're from the upper part of the United States, the Utes, even Utes grow tired and weary. What's his point? Even like these young people over here, they look like they're full of energy and they're ready to rear and to go. But he says even they get really worn out. Even they need this unfathomable strength. Just a boy, just a lad, just a little lass, a little girl, just a servant. Even those people, he says, they just get solely waylaid. So if they get really tired, just imagine how the older people get. Yeah, empty. They grow tired and weary as though the result of a flight. The Hebrew word here is they're weary because they're running from something. Running from something. You ever had, I don't know, I went through this season of my life with just absolutely horrible. It's right after I became a Christian. And I got so overwhelmed. I went back to school. I got so overwhelmed. I barely could make it through the day. And I was just like there was a bird or something was sitting on my shoulder, and right there next to my ear was telling me how I was falling apart. It wasn't going to work. What's with this new faith? How are you going to handle all that you've taken on? It's too much. You're going to fail. I had started back to school. It was horrible. And I was weary, man. It was the definition of weary. It was the weariest I've ever been in my life. You ever been? You know what I'm talking about? It's like that voice never shuts up. Ugh. Weary. And I was running. Have you ever noticed when you run from a problem, it tends to get bigger and stronger and more forceful and more intelligent and more cunning? It's amazing. Like if you just try to outrun it, it gets faster. Then you find out it's up ahead of you, waiting on you. That's how bad it is. That's where I was. And what do we say? What do we say now? Here we go. What do we say? And you've said this before. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. It's a natural thing to say. But it's also not true. I can't do this anymore. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, literally, what are you going to do? Cease to exist? What are you going to blow up? What are you going to just divide yourself into a million pieces? I can't do this anymore. What does that mean? Well, listen, some people make amazing amounts of effort and investment in I can't do this anymore. Some people have been doing what they said they could not do anymore for 20 years. You've perfected it. You've made it an identity. Like, I can't do this anymore wasn't really a statement that you actually meant, but really what it meant is I can't do this anymore, but I'm going to keep on doing it, even though I said I couldn't do it, and I'm going to keep on doing it. It's going to become sort of my mantra. I've seen that happen. I can't do this anymore. I'll tell you what's more exhausting than I can't do this anymore is hearing people say I can't do this anymore. Repeatedly. Now, what do we really mean when we say I can't do this anymore? I know you're tired, I know you're frustrated, I know you're weary, I know you're at wit's end, and I know that, but what are you really saying? Well, what we're really saying is I shouldn't do this anymore. I shouldn't do this anymore. Or I should do something else. Like, you get up in the morning and you don't want to live. You say, I can't do this anymore. Well, actually, you can. Because the scripture says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So unfortunately, you're sort of working against the Lord there. The Lord helps you to go on. But the real thing is, I shouldn't do this anymore. Not I can't. Because you can. And we're evidence of this. You can do it. Better said, I shouldn't do this anymore. Better said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I like that one better. I'm going to start doing something differently. I remember in psychology classes, they had this word, it was malingering. Maybe some of you took these classes that were absolutely worthless. Malingering, what is that? That's when someone sort of fakes it. Like, there's a huge payoff in life for those who are ill or victimized. It's huge, especially if you get yourself around enough Christians and you're hurting, you'll get a lot of attention. You'll get attention, you'll get resources. But the question is, are you going to keep doing that and just keep receiving things from people, or are you actually going to do something different? Now, here we go. I can't do this anymore. I shouldn't do this anymore. I'm going to do something different. That's the difference between prolonging weariness and a lack of strength and the status quo and the same old, and people will be there for me. But the thing is, there's got to be a plan that calls you to action, that makes you do something different so you get different results. And stop asking God to give you all the strength you need when you're on a totally different program than He is. He doesn't want you wallowing in or feeling sorry for yourself. He wants you to have a plan. And it's in the midst of that plan that He gives you strength. And young men stumble and fall. Now, here's the thing. If we just keep doing the same thing over and over, eventually, inevitably, we're going to get tired and we're going to fall. It's out there waiting. It's on the calendar. You don't know when it's there, but it's when you're all alone and you're in your own world and there's no accountability and zero encouragement and you're the sheep that left the 99 and you just are out there and you're tired and you're weary and you're walking around saying, I can't do this anymore. That's when you fall. That's when you get picked off. And that's when you get crushed like a grape. And then you say, man, I can't do this anymore. It's like, wait a minute, you already said that. You're toast, is what you are. You're toast. I was hiking up Rock Mountain, and then my whole family psyched me out and said, Dad, there's no way you're going to make it up Chimney Top. So I listened to him, and I listened to him, and I was like, I've been on Rock Mountain so many times, I kept looking over at Chimney Top and going, what's the big deal? It's like right over there. It's like, what's this deal here? Like, what's the big deal? So I started one day, I said, come on, we're going to Chimney Top. So we started walking up Chimney Top. What a bunch of wussies. That thing's nothing. That's nothing. It's like a long staircase with 10 or 15 feet of rocks to crawl up. Big deal. But I'll tell you what, when I got up to the top, I was toast wasted, man. Not letting anybody know what's really going on, you know, you go down. And what happens? Well, you're not as sure-footed as you were on the way up, you know. Your leg goes in weird ways. And listen, I had this stick in my hand, and I thought, gee, if I put that out in front of me, I could get impaled by that stick. I could die from that stick in my hand. And that's when you fall. You contractors know this. When do people have accidents on the job? At the end of the day, right? When they're not safe, when they're not on top of their game, that's when people get hurt. Well, this is what weariness does. Why are people weary? Well, they're weary because they're alone. There's no source of strength. There's no conduit. There's no inflow of strength. Most of the time, when people get really weary, what do? Well, if they're not typically in a spiritual family, they'll run to the church. In a state of weariness. But you got to be in relationship, you see. You got to be in relationship to get the strength of other people, to get the strength of the Lord, to overcome that weariness in ways that you cannot even fathom. That's what it's about. So, aloneness is equal to weariness. We're not meant, we're not called, we're not designed, we're not instructed, we're not commanded in no way, shape, or form to be all alone. And you can be in a crowd of people and be all alone, friend. You can be very alone. I actually made a career out of it for many years. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. What is this? I was over in Franklin yesterday, and I saw this church sign, don't hope for, pray for. And I got to thinking about that. I really don't know what it means. But I hope and pray, I figured out. It's like, I'm hoping for something, but let's go ahead and hope for it, but let's talk to the Lord about it. That's prayer. You can't just blanket hope for something. So, those who hope in the Lord, some of your translations say those who wait upon the Lord, those who are tied, bound to the immortality and the immovability of God, not shadows or trends or fads or emotions or ups or downs or depression or bipolar or this or that. Those who are tied to, bound to God in their actions and their behavior and in their minds and in their hearts, they can have some hope. So wait on God first, hope in God first, and trust in God first. This is a huge mistake I see people making in life. They want to see a situation or a circumstance change. So they trust in another person to make it happen. Or they trust that that person is actually going to change on their own or with God's help. And we have to go to God first. Some of you have prodigals in your family, or you have situations in your family that you can't do anything about. No man can change it. It's a medical situation. It's whatever it is. You've got to link yourself and tie yourself to the Lord of hosts, God himself, and not let go. I mean, white knuckle, not let go, and bind yourself to him. Like, shackle yourself to him and bother him about this first. And then take action second, and work with other people on it second. Sometimes we get that thing reversed. And then he says, they will soar on wings like eagles, and they will run and not grow weary. Some of your translations say mount up with wings. Here is one of the most important things in the world that we live in right now that Christians really have to be on top of. And I fear, I'm concerned that we're not doing this. You've got to live, and I've got to live, a transcendent life. What is that? It's a fancy word. We have to rise above. And I'm not saying that because the Falcons are playing. We really do need to rise up above things. 1 Peter 3:9, some people trade insult for insult. They get on that horizontal plane where there's back and forth, debate, show disrespect, don't respect authority, talk behind someone's back, gossip here, don't call anybody out on anything, slander somebody over here. And it's kind of like boom, 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 all this is happening here, but no one's rising above it. Where's the person that rises above that nonsense? Who doesn't laugh at what's being told, who's not being sarcastic, who's rising, transcending above it. That's where strength is. That's what mounting up with wings as eagles means. There's a storm and you're going above it. I'll tell you one thing right now, and a young person, middle and high school, who actually perfects this early in life will be a real winner in life, a real leader in life, will be prosperous in life. A person who will not conform to the status socially, but will rise above it. Who will do something that no one else is doing. Who will embark out into the uncomfortableness of rising above and actually showing themselves to be more worthy than the conduct that's taking place around them. This is the way. A real estate agent that receives customers and clients that shows themselves to be different than the other common way of doing business and transcends it, the honorable way, will be fruitful. That's rising up. Now, that's where power comes. That's when the infusion of strength comes. That's when weariness leaves you behind. When you transcend that. When you transcend grief and commonness and you pursue holiness as a person. Serious. God meets you right there. That's the infusion of strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. Think about that. Run and not grow weary. I got winded the other day going to the P.O. box. Run and not grow weary. The transcendent life in conversations, in everything that you do. And if you want to know how you're doing on this, look at your spouse. What, my friend, did your spouse say to you that elicited a same response back? And you had, I had, we had the opportunity to transcend. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're just walking in the flesh. But your response to them elicited a like-kind response from them back, and here we go. We need to go see Pastor Gary so he can fix it in about an hour. Transcend. That's what Isaiah is calling the people of Israel to do. And then they will walk and not be faint. I was in a youth group one time, and I gave this girl this assignment to do something. She had to give a little talk. And then she said, I want to tell you something. She said she stood up on a chair about that far off the ground. She stood up on it, and she said, told another person, she said, grab my hand and pull me off the chair. So she told the littlest girl in the room to grab her hand, and the littlest girl in the whole room pulled her off the chair without much trouble. You know what? It was far easier to pull the girl off the chair than to pull the person on the floor up onto the chair. And we're in the climate that we live in, the culture that we live in. The Christian now has this opportunity. It's always been there, but it's now magnified more than ever. Is to not pull people down off the chair. Is to treat people with respect. Is to go out of our way for the lonely kid in the school. To like the unlikable. To embrace the embraceable, to transcend what the expectations are. The expectations in our culture are getting lower and lower and lower, and we have to go higher and higher and higher, even still. The greater disparity between our actions and the commonplace where we conform to the pattern of this world, the greater our witness and the more satisfaction, the more honor, the more gratitude we have in our life, and the more strength. It's very tough to be weary when you transcend issues. Transcendent life. So I end with this. Can you say this to yourself? I can't do this anymore. I say to you, you actually can. The question is, will you do this anymore? Should you do this anymore? We've got to do this in life every now and again. We have to make a decision. I've got to spend time by myself, getting alone with God, and just looking at some issue in my life, and I've got to really look at it, and I've really got to define the issues, and I've really got to say, this is the thing I'm going after right now. This is the change I'm making now. When you single one thing out, you say, this is the one thing I'm going to start working on right now, and I'm going to define it and get someone else's help. When you do that one thing, you can overcome it. But when you add something else to it, you then dilute your whole purpose. With the noblest intentions, we take on too much. But there's one thing, and you'd be surprised how systematic that one thing is to causing other problems in your life. Those problems seem to minimize, get lower, get diluted when that one thing is taken care of. The one thing that you say, I can't do this anymore, well, prove it. Prove it. Do something different. And then the statement makes sense. Some things are just too familiar, too cyclical, too reoccurring, too all the time. And after a while, friend, you get convinced that you're not in charge. You're not in the driver's seat of your own life. Something else is. Someone else is, some situation. What is it you want? What is it you want to become? What is in your way? External, internal, and philosophical. Who's going to help you? And do you have a plan? That plan call you to action? And can you see ahead of you how great it could be if you followed the plan? And do you see how miserable you'd be if you don't? Is there someone in your life who needs you to walk them through that very process. It's not that hard. It's all laid out there before you. I want to say this. I sometimes listen to enough people say, I can't do this anymore. And then I say to myself, I don't think I can do this anymore. And you know, we're both right. We got to do something different. What makes today different than every other day before? A decision needs to be made. What do you want? Who do you want to become? You want to become a better husband? Then you're going to need strength, and you're going to need help, and you're going to need a plan, and you're going to need to transcend some things. And there's going to be resistance. Isaiah was on it. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, Father, keep us from walking alone. Keep us from pretending. Keep us from being satisfied with something far less than who you are and what you want. Call us to rise above the common, the ordinary, the average, and the mediocre, and show your people they are the head and not the tail. They are not conquerors, they are more than conquerors. And in our weariness, you have strength. Minister that. Minister that. Not in the confines of a comfortable message in a sanctuary, but in the trenches of everyday life. Take us out of the mud and help us to rise above and soar. Soar above the very things that seek to pull us down. Give us a spirit of triumphing over things. Help us to triumph over things. And to every person here who's walking in shame and embarrassment, thinking they're controlling all that's going on around them, I pray for a massive wake-up call. We need each other so very badly. And we need your intervention in our relationships so very badly, because we have failed to define you for who you really are, and we have fathomed what is unfathomable. Help us to that end. In Jesus' holy name, and the church said,